Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 5:45 for our triple option feature. And I think we're going to take this a little longer. We're going to go to 6:10 and do our pick six segment. Let's go to our talk and text line. We have on with us from NFL on Fox and Fox and Friends, Jen Hale. Jen, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hi, guys. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Jen, right off the bat, I'll ask you about Tyler Shuck. You've seen the development of him, and they got some people, oh, Mike, don't evaluate him into 2 years. I'm like, what, 2 years? I could be dead in 2 years. I'm going to give you the damn evaluation now. In 2 years, you'll know exactly that. I got to tell you what I see now, and I know you'll tell us what you see now. And from what you've heard from other people in the NFL, it just gives this city and the fan base and the Who Dat Nation so much hope of what you've seen from Tyler Shuck.
He has so much promise, Mike. It is such a wonderful high note for the Saints to end on. I know they didn't win that last game with the Falcons, and there are no moral victories, but Tyler Shuck is a moral victory, and he has developed so quickly. You can really see all those years in college paying off, paying dividends, because he was not your average rookie by any stretch. I had his first win, not his first start, but his first win in Carolina, and then I got to have the game Sunday, Saints versus Atlanta. So I was actually talking with Drew Brees about Tyler, wanting Drew's evaluation, and Drew is so excited about the future for the Saints and Tyler Shuck. He thinks he is just a tremendous talent and the right type of locker room leader. What Drew loved about him is he said most rookies, when the pressure comes, they escape left, they escape right. Tyler is so brave and so seasoned at stepping up into that pocket and completing that throw and hanging in there. He knows how to diagnose defenses. And Drew said what he really thought impressed him the most in terms of a future of leadership is he has such an attitude of gratitude, is how Drew put it. And that transfers over to his teammates so much. So he's going to be the guy in that locker room that holds everybody together and holds them accountable in the right way.
If there's an MVP on this team, it's Brandon Staley and what he did defensively. Early on, there was some missteps and things weren't just right. But you saw down the stretch, his defense held court. This team, his MO is they don't start off well. And, you know, you're playing catch-up all the time. But Brandon Staley's defense was able to kind of thwart a lot of different runaway games. And I thought what he did was a masterful job. And, okay, it's not like this team is littered with all pro guys on the defensive side of football, but he made it work. And, okay, everybody's watched Hoosiers, okay? And Gene Hackman's deal of team, that's what they played, team defense.
I think one of the things Brandon Staley does the best, he has a system, he has his defensive belief, but he tailors that to the talent around him. And so many people use that phrase, but they don't actually do it, especially at the NFL level. And Staley took stock of what he had, what type of weapons, what the strengths were, what the weaknesses were. Seeing Cam Jordan does not want to play inside. He'll do it, but he does not want to. How do you maximize all of Cam's abilities while also understanding what he's in year 15 and his body's had a lot of wear and tear? So I think what Staley did was so smart and so mature, even though he's a younger coordinator. You see Chase Young, the defensive player of the month, so well deserved. He was so excited to get double digit sacks I was so happy for him. And he's really Staley's breathed new life into Chase Young's career. These guys fight for him. They're excited to play for him, and he's building something that's going to be very special. I just hope the Saints can hold on to Staley. I think he's going to be getting, if not this year, next year, a lot of head coaching attention again.
I'd rather have a coach people want than people that nobody wants. That's the way I look at it. Hey, if I'll lose him and he becomes a head coach, God bless him. But I'd much rather have the coach that everybody's looking for because they see his talents. Early in the year, when I asked you, give me a team that will bounce back, you said San Francisco. Because there was so many injuries last year. Well, guess what? It was the same repeat this year with injuries.
Right?
But look at how they've been able to get out of this. Do you think they could possibly win this weekend? They're just beset with injuries. But this is Shanahan's best coaching job, to get them to this point today throughout his head coaching career in San Francisco.
Absolutely. I can't wait to watch that game. It's going to be a fantastic showdown. And with Kyle Shanahan's mind, you can never count the 49ers out. He's absolutely brilliant. I want to see Christian McCaffrey. And what I would like for CMC to do is manage his offseason a little bit differently. I think what CMC needs to do this year, he has such an intense, crazy cross-training offseason. But I think as he's getting up in years, his body needs more rest, actually, and different types of that intense training. So I worry for Kyle that he just doesn't have the weapons he's going to need to make a deep run, but I do think they could win this weekend. I don't see them winning at all or getting to the Super Bowl, but I think they could win Wild Card weekend and move on at least to the next round.
When I know you've done preseason games for the Falcons, and that team's got talent, and what Terry Fontenot did in the draft this year, I was impressed. He hit with that. I mean, it cost him a lot to get James Pierce, but he can play. Jaylen Walker, he can play. Xavier Watts, he can play. And you got Bijan, and you got a receiver that, if he can stay healthy, Landon's a star player. Do you feel confident Michael Penix is the guy in Atlanta? And kind of where do you think this search will go? Because not only are you hiring a head coach, you're also having a GM. And the way it's kind of constructed, Jen, is sort of miscombobulated a little bit. But I know one thing, when you look at just talent, 1 through 53, Atlanta's got as much as anybody in the NFC South.
Mike, no doubt. On paper, they should have won the NFC South easily. Preseason, I was so high on them. They really did not have a weak area. For years, it was their defense. But as you mentioned, Terry invested heavily in the draft on their defenses. They finally got a ton of dead money off their books and had some money to play with. It's a head scratcher how they couldn't be more consistent, because you did see them have good games. And look, they finished the season on a high note, a winning streak. They finally found some of that consistency towards the end when Penix was out and Kirk Cousins came in. So to your first question about the defense, yes, they did a fantastic job reloading, and they found some cornerstone players for years to come. I think they hit on basically every defensive draft pick they took. They've got some edge rushers now that are really going to scare people down the road, especially in year two when they've had an off season to fully digest the NFL and refine their game and refine their approach to everything. Michael Penix, I do not know if he's the guy. I really don't. And hasn't that been Atlanta's problem for years? They haven't found a quarterback since Matt Ryan. It cost Arthur Smith his job, the idea of we can get by with an average-type quarterback and surround him with great pieces. Well, no, you can't. You got to have a quarterback in the NFL. That's the most important position. And they thought it was Penix. I have questions durability-wise. And I have questions accuracy-wise. How does he mature? How is he using this quote-unquote time off, injury time, of course, to better his game? He's got a ton of expectations on him. And with that roster, Drake London, we saw Kyle Pitts coming on at the end. He and Kirk Cousins Kirk, it was a really interesting observation because Kyle Pitts has been such a head-scratcher as well for them, right? Highest drafted tight end in history and just never really lived up to any of the expectations until just recently. How much of that is because it's a contract year? How much of that is because they're using him differently? Kirk said, you know, with his size, you think of him as a jump ball Jimmy Graham type. Everybody remembers Jimmy's game here in New Orleans, but he's not. He's a terrible jump ball type. He likes to use his speed, even though he's this 6'5", 6'6" guy that you wouldn't think would run fast. So if they can keep using him the way they did at the end, man, Penix has a wealth of weapons. It's almost like if you can't succeed with that, dude, you're not going to succeed in this league anywhere.
Jen, the playoff picture as a whole, if you're looking at the NFC, I think a lot of folks think the Seahawks, deservedly the one seed, their defense has been playing out of its mind. They have one of the best weapons in all of football with JSN, who had a career year this year. They're feeling good about the Seahawks' chances. Also, the Rams, Matt Stafford's been there, done that. McVay's been there, done that. But the AFC just feels a lot more wide open. You know, you have those two teams in the NFC that people feel really good about. The AFC, when people will ask, you know, what do you think about who's going to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl this year, it's a little bit more intriguing because it feels like those top seeds with the Broncos, there's question marks with Bo Nix, and you know, can he really shine on the big stage and get them to the Super Bowl despite how good their defense has been all year in Denver? And then the Patriots, they've only played three teams with a winning record all season. Are they legitimate or not? And then you kind of move down the line, Jacksonville's red hot, but are they going to be the representatives out of the AFC? It just feels like it's ripe for some chaos in the AFC playoff picture. Just want to get your thoughts on if there's any kind of sleepers that you're looking at in the AFC specifically, but also who your favorite is to come out of the AFC and get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. You know, normally fifth seeds and lower, you can write them off, but I don't know. I think the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen, I just cannot count them out, even though they haven't had the season you would have hoped they had, regular season. If they can get hot in the playoffs at the right time, it really doesn't matter, does it? No, Bo Nix is untested. You've got a lot of question marks about the seeds ahead of them, and Josh Allen is just so supremely talented, and the Bills have that run game. Their Achilles heel is their run defense. But, man, other than that, they have so many tools and weapons. I truly think they could be a sleeper who jumps up there and ends up claiming that number one spot, going on a crazy, crazy tear at the very end. As far as the NFC, obviously you have to admire what the Seattle Seahawks have done and Sam Darnold. I'm going to trust Matthew Stafford before I'm going to trust Sam Darnold in clutch time. I think at the end of the day, when all is said and done, it'll be the Rams playing for it all. And I think Stafford will end up with the MVP.
Jen, that's why you and I are pals. We think along the same lines there on Matt Stafford and the Rams. Now, the one thing, Jacksonville, now I don't know if they can make it all the way, but they are one of only three teams since 2000 to not give up 75 yards rushing to one runner. And
crazy,
we know how dependent the Bills are with James Cook. That, to me, is going to be one heck of a game. And I got to give my old buddy Pete Jenkins, 84 years young, he told me this the first week in August. He worked with the Jacksonville defensive line. He's like, hey, you got extra money? Put it on Jacksonville. I think that they got a chance to be really good. And he said, I only got one question mark, Trevor Lawrence. That was Pete's comment, Michael. Yeah, I want a question. Trevor Lawrence, that's it, because they can play defense.
They are phenomenal defensively, absolutely. And what Lim Cohn has done with that offense, trust me, the Tampa Bay Bucs are kicking themselves for letting Cohn walk out the door. They fired the Grizzard, the OC who took Lim's place, because, I mean, he didn't even sniff filling those shoes at all. And quite frankly, I'm surprised Todd Bowles kept his job. They are potent on both sides. Lim, one of the up-and-coming brilliant minds. He's going to be one of the next Kyle Shanahans offensively. And he really has found a way to get Trevor Lawrence to the next gear, which nobody else had, because he's such a laid-back, cool dude. Does he have that killer instinct? And Lim's helping bring that out more and more in him. So I think they're a team to watch, not just this season, but next season as well. And in terms of the run game for Buffalo, yeah, they've got a great run defense, but I would say Buffalo, you got to account for two-star runners, because Josh Allen can use his legs really well, too. Let's not forget what a great scrambler he is. So it's like having to account for an extra person in there for that Jacksonville defense. It'll be a great matchup to watch.
Yeah, Cook is the lightning, and basically Josh Allen's the thunder runner for them. Jen, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Also want to tell you, do a great job all year long covering the NFL, and also to all the charity work you do in our area. So tell everybody if they want to contribute to Sideline Pass and all the different entities that you're involved with, how they can do it.
You're awesome, Mike. You've always been such a huge supporter of Sideline Pass. Thank you. We are doing scholarships and back-to-school supplies right now. Log on to sidelinepass.org to help kids living in group foster care homes, academically excellent but financially disadvantaged. We'd love it. Sidelinepass.org.
Thank you, Jen. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jen.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. All righty. NFL on Fox sideline reporter Jen Hale does a great job covering the NFL, and we sort of miss her. Covering NBA games. She doesn't
That's
do it
fact.
Anymore. She got mama duties, so I get it. But we miss her doing that also. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. And Charlie, today, Stephen Ross made what I think a lot of people thought he would do. He fired Mike McDaniel as head coach of the Miami Dolphins. And if I am John Harbaugh, I take a good look at that and say, hey, wait a minute. If you give me control, full control here of this organization, man, I'm headed down to South Florida. It's nice to live down there. Ain't got to worry about that cold weather in Miami, and he got to fix the defense. That to me, that was bits and pieces of it, but it just never really came together for him. So I think Mike McDaniel, to be honest with you, I think just sort of like Kevin Stefanski, he's going to get another shot at this. But who's going to end up with Harbaugh, I think, is the $64 million question. I know the Giants would love to get him. Atlanta, I'm sure, is one of those teams with their hands way up in the air. Hey, we'd love to have you. But watch for Miami, because I think in that spot, the owner would give you a lot of control. And I think after going through what he went through with Steve Bisciotti and the Ravens, I think he would like that particular deal. And you do have certain bits and pieces there with the Dolphins that you can build upon. It's not like taking over a three-win football team.
No, McDaniel's not going to be on the streets for very long, Mike. He's either going to get another head coaching opportunity or he's going to become an outstanding OC for some team. I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. Harbaugh is going to have his pick of like five different teams.
He's the guy.
Exactly. He is the number one target on the market right now. We talked about that earlier in the week, basically when he was fired on Tuesday, that he'll get to choose where he wants to end up. I know that Schefter had put out the early report that the Giants were the favorites, and so the betting markets adjusted, and they had New York as the favorite to land Harbaugh. But I'm right there with you, Mike. I think that Miami would be a pretty interesting fit. Apparently, they're supposed to be hiring their new GM pretty soon as well, because Chris Greer obviously got fired. They're one of the head coaching vacancies that also have a GM vacancy as well. So it's all going to be something to follow in the coming hours, coming days. I think this is going to be something that resolves pretty quickly, though.
If I'm John Harbaugh, I'm telling that GM what I want, so to speak, because I'm in control now. Because if I don't get it with you, I can get it somewhere else.
Bingo.
In the National Football League. And today, no surprise, my number one rated defensive player, Arvell Reese, the outside linebacker from Ohio State, made it official, and he is declared for the 2026 NFL draft. If he gets to four, I'll be shocked. And I had a friend of mine who actually is on the staff with Ohio State, and he tipped me off before the season. Man, he said, watch Arvell Reese. And I saw him last year, and he was a good player, but he wasn't a great player.
Breakout.
He's like, I'm just telling you, he's so good, we got to pull him from practice because he's dominating these practice sessions. Sure enough, he was every bit that guy this year as an off-ball linebacker. I really think he's better off hand in the dirt, Sick him. Get after the quarterback. Arvel Reese has declared that he is coming out for the 2026 NFL draft. No shock. Won't sleep long draft night. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Back here on the Big 870 WWL Sports Talk, Mike DiTiglio along with Charlie Long, and on our talk and text line, Ryan Roberts, who works for A to Z Sports, covers the NFL draft, college football, also is a big Notre Dame guy. So, Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, and I'll ask you right off the bat, you got to see him play. Tell us your thoughts on Jeremiah Love, who I think would be a perfect fit for this Saints offense, and do you think he could make a date?
Yeah, I appreciate you guys for having me on, first and foremost. For Love, it's really fun, actually, because like you said, I do cover Notre Dame a lot on the college football side, and I've been covering that kid since he was a junior in high school in the recruiting side of things. So seeing his maturation as a football player has been absolutely fantastic, and he's certainly in play in a couple different spots inside of the top 10. There's a few teams that could use a dynamic element, and the Saints are a really interesting one because one of, like, when people talk about like the comparisons, the player comps for a guy like a Jeremiah Love, Alvin Kamara is typically a guy that's talked about pretty regularly because of the ability that they have, short areas, explosiveness out of the backfield. But Jeremiah Love even brings more home run speed than even Kamara has that he brings to the table. So he's a tremendous football player, man. He's one of those guys that has increasingly gotten better and better at the little things over the last couple of years, improving his power profile, being a better pass blocker. He was always a really gifted, you know, track and field athlete, straight line speed, explosiveness. Like, that stuff's easy for him, but it's really kind of his attention to detail that has really helped him evolve into an all-around running back now.
Ryan, I'll ask you this, knowing a little bit about his track background, and you can almost see it in his gait, the way he runs.
Yeah.
That, okay, that guy's been on a track before. And you talked about his work as a pass protector, and that's so big, especially if you're playing quarterback. But, you know, his off-the-field stuff, because they're going to dig into all of this. Everything I've heard about him has always been on the positive side about Jeremiah Love. Is that the same thing that you've witnessed over the years having covered him?
Yeah, I mean, so I developed a really good relationship with his dad, Jason, and he's the funniest kid of all time because, like, he's kind of that comic book nerd of a person that you wouldn't anticipate just by talking to him that he's like this big time athlete, but that's ultimately why he fit at Notre Dame. You know, like the Texas A&M's of the world, the Oregon's of the world, the teams that have big money behind them, they try throwing the kitchen sink at Jeremiah Love when he was a recruit and, you know, after every offseason, right? Like, he's at Notre Dame. So, but it was just, the fit made sense. Like, he is a studious young man. He learned to love school over the last few years, but he has some really unique interests. I mean, he did Jeremonstar, which is like his comic book series. He basically made his life into a comic book is like one of the things that he does off the field. So he's a little bit quirky. He's a little bit unique in a lot of ways. Like, again, he doesn't carry him. He carries himself on the field as this very, you know, got big vibrato and he kind of puffs out his chest and he's got a little bit of swagger to him. But off the field, he's one of the nicest kids ever. He's a little bit shy, to be honest, and he doesn't really carry himself like this big time future top 10 NFL draft pick. But I think honestly, that's why he will fit in just pretty much every locker room, because as a rookie, I think this kid's just going to kind of put his head down and work. And then obviously he'll break out of his shell when he kind of earns his spot on the field. But yeah, great kid, a lot of very unique interests, and I couldn't speak any higher for him. It's when you know you have the complete package is when if someone asks you, like, is he a better person or a better football player? Well, it's very debatable for a guy like Jeremiah Love. He really is the complete package in that regard.
quirky, he would fit right in here in Louisiana.
Yes, he would.
Believe me. We got a lot of them like that here, including myself. Ryan, your thoughts on tonight's game, Ole Miss, Miami of Florida, strength on strength, Ole Miss's explosive offense going up against a bad-to-the-bone defense of Miami of Florida. But, man, when you got a quarterback like Chambliss, you ain't never out of it. Never. And that guy put on a performance on the Sugar Bowl, and I've seen, I hate to say it, but like 50 years of it or more. And that's on the Mount Rushmore for me, for what he did against that Georgia defense. So your thoughts on the game tonight, Ole Miss, Miami or Florida?
Yeah, I mean, I think Chambliss is like the ultimate like get out of jail free card to a degree, because like even when Ole Miss doesn't have the run game necessarily working with Kiwan Lacy, like they still have the ability to make big plays because of his run pass threat. So like his legs and his ability to be a little bit of an improviser, like that really does kind of level the playing field for even the best defenses, which obviously Miami has one of them, right? Like that defensive line is no joke. But I know that everyone's kind of hyper-focusing on that matchup specifically, right? Like not many people are talking about like Miami's offense this week. Not many people are talking about Ole Miss's defense, because that is the matchup that everyone wants to see. They want to see the Ole Miss offense, even without Lane Kiffin, has been playing very good football against the Miami ferocious pass rush. And while we sometimes hyper-focus too much on it, I think we have to hyper-focus on that, because that matchup is going to determine what type of football game this is. And there are two unique types of football games that lend one side to the other. If Chambliss, Lacy, and Wallace, and Stribling, like all these really talented pass game weapons, if they are able to have success early, that's how you make Miami uncomfortable. Like, they don't want to play a high-fire game. They want to play to their pace. They want to keep low-scoring games. Miami wants to beat people up. That's what they want to do. But on the other side, if Miami is able to neutralize that offensive attack a little bit and make it a dirty game and a, kind of a physical game, that's not the game that Ole Miss wants to play necessarily. So I think we'll have a really good gauge within like the first 10 minutes of this football game, first quarter of this football game. If Ole Miss comes out hot and maybe gets 7-10 on the first couple of drives and you're like, okay, they're moving with a little bit of pace here, I think they have a chance in the end. I unfortunately, for my fandom's sake, have to pick Miami in this game just because of that, the defense. And I think the defense, run game, both those things travel very well, especially in this type of setting. So I'll take Miami reluctantly, but I do think it's going to end up being a very good football game.
Reuben Bain Jr. Looks to be, he'll be a top 10 pick in this draft. He potentially could be a top 5 pick. And Coach Ogeron, Coach O, I talked to him about it because he had lived in South Florida for quite some time. Both his sons are coaching at Miami of Florida. And he told me initially, Mike, I thought that he would be better off inside as a defensive tackle. But he said, man, the way he can rush a quarterback, I got him out playing end in the NFL. And he said the one thing about him is the fact that because of his size, you've got some versatility that you can kick him inside at tackle at times. But he said, man, he is pedal to the metal and a guy that's relentless out on the football field. Your thoughts on Reuben Bain Jr.?
Well, I like that you mentioned that little tidbit on Coach O, because that conversation has been had in the NFL a lot over this offseason, even into this season, of positional fits on the next level, because there are some teams that do view Reuben Bain potentially being a more disruptive and better NFL player on the inside because of the lack of arm length, the lack of reach. But then more than anything, that kid gets off and he plays really low to the ground, and he is a hard person to stop on his first couple steps. Because one thing that I always kind of load back to is Ed Orgeron actually had a quote years ago, and I'm not going to say it word for word, but it was basically, if a defensive lineman doesn't have a great first step, doesn't have a great get off, he can't play. And Reuben Bain has that. Now, Reuben Bain, I don't think has the greatest like closing speed range of all time of pursuits, but that kid, when he gets off the football, is fast and he's super violent. So I agree with you. Like, you can use him in multiple lines, which I think, even though he doesn't have great length, he's a guy that I think that some three-man front teams will still like because of the physicality that he plays with the pad level that he plays with, the relentless motor that he plays with. So I do think that it's going to be kind of on a team-to-team perspective of whether they see him as a true edge player, whether they see him as a true inside player, whether they see him as a pure hybrid. Like, it's really going to depend on personal preference, but the kid's having a great season. He is relentless, and he is a very difficult person to stop one-on-one.
Ryan, it's something that we've talked a little bit about early on in the process, that it feels like there's going to be three edge rusher prospects taken in the top 10 with, obviously, you mentioned Reuben Bain, Arvell Reese, who just recently declared for the draft. Mike and I were talking about him in the last segment. And man, you watch, Mike and I were talking about this off air as well. You watch Arvell Reese in pursuit speed. He just flashes from sideline to sideline. In like the blink of an eye, he'll catch up to a ball carrier. It's unbelievable. But I want to ask you about David Bailey. 14 and a half sacks this past season with Texas Tech. I feel like he would be a really good fit in New Orleans with Brandon Staley's defense, a 3-4 outside linebacker. I mean, with David Bailey specifically, I've seen some people say maybe he'll slide out of the top 10, but it just feels like the production that he had at Texas Tech, and even though in the college football playoff game against Oregon, the offense wasn't doing anything, David Bailey was still all over the field against an elite opponent. Just want to get your thoughts on Bailey. I feel like he's a lock for the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, even though Texas Tech got shut out and they ended up losing that football game, you know, pretty decisively because of their offensive performance, David Bailey, you could still argue, was maybe the best player on the field for either team still. I mean, he was fantastic. And about in the middle of the season, Charlie, I had a scout actually text me and say, I basically said, like, you know, where do you think the range is on Bailey right now? Because coming into the season, he was talked about in the day two range from transferring over from Stanford, obviously, to Texas Tech, because he was just a kind of a designated pass rusher at Stanford. Like, you didn't know what he could do on rundowns and all that type of stuff. And he told me, he was like, he's going in the top 15, like, spot out top 15 pick. And I'm like, okay, all right. Well, and at that point, I wanted to see a little bit more because that was not even halfway through the season. And you wanted to see him against some steeper level of competition because, you know, the Big 12 has some good football teams, but the Big 12 also does not have some good football teams. So, you know, him beating up against Kansas, while impressive, I wanted to see him against future NFL offensive linemen. And that Oregon game, for instance, is a big indicator of that'll translate, right? Like, you made Isaiah World and Alex Harkey look like they can't play football, and they can play football. They just looked really bad against a really good future NFL pass rusher. Now, that being said, that kid's going to have probably somewhere around 34-inch arms. They only have estimated measurements on that. So he's going to check out the length, explosiveness. That kid's probably going to jump like 39-plus inches in the vert. Like, he's a freaky athlete. He's still, though, a very average to semi-below average run defender. So there's going to be some things, I think, limitations just in the run game with lack of power. But that first step, explosiveness, closing speed, sells in the NFL. So I think he's going to go in the top 15 for sure. I think if he has a good draft process, he could definitely lock himself into the top 10 because pass rush sells in the NFL right now. It's just how it is. And that kid rushes the passer as good as anybody in this class.
He's a sick'em player.
Yep.
He's going to be a top 10 pick. Sick 'em. You know what to do. Tomorrow night, Oregon, Indiana, it's the rematch. I look at Indiana, and I'll be honest with you, Ryan. They don't have the most talented team out there, but my God, they are so well coached. They're fundamentally sound. You got a star quarterback. You got some really good receivers. You can run the football. You get after them on defense. You're aggressive. And you don't lose gap integrity. Every time somebody runs the ball at them, they got two guys around them. And that being so well coached, your thoughts, though, it's difficult to beat a team twice. I think Indiana's got a shot here against the Ducks.
It's super cliche, but I really think it's going to come down to which quarterback has the better game. I mean, it was kind of like that the first time around. You know, we saw Dante had a couple more mistakes the first time around than Fernando Mendoza, and Fernando Mendoza ended the game on the high note because people see like 30-20, and they're like, you know, Indiana won by two scores, and you're like, but did you watch the game? Like, that was a one-score game going into the late into the fourth quarter, and then they put it away. Like, that was a really competitive football game. So I think it's really going to come down to that, man. Indiana's the most fascinating team, to your point, because – while there might not be an elite group necessarily on either side of the ball, when you really kind of boil it down as far as like future, I mean, outside of Fernando Mendoza, we're talking about, you know, a couple day two players on this team, and we're talking about a good amount of day three players. They are incredibly well coached, though, and they don't hurt themselves. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, they're not the worst enemy ever. So that team scares you. But if they do hurt themselves, just one turnover, one misstep, one bad decision, whatever it is, they can be had against a team like Oregon because Oregon does have a whole lot of talent. I'm picking the Ducks, but I don't feel great about it. Like, I do think that it is hard to beat a team twice. I agree with you 100%. I think that Dante has played better football, although he didn't play great against Texas Tech. Like, he's played better football the second half of the year. He's showed improvement. It's just going to come down to which quarterback is more efficient, doesn't hurt themselves, and makes the big play when it matters most. I'll take the Ducks in the rematch, but I do think that this is a game that could go either way.
One thing that Indiana does elite, they elitely coached.
Oh, yeah.
Man, that team is about as well prepared as any college football team that's walking this green grass, so to speak, today. That's what Cignetti has done at Indiana. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us, but always appreciate it. Great insights.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ryan.
Ryan Roberts does a great job, A to Z Sports, covering college football. Covered Notre Dame for a long period of time. That's why I wanted him on to talk about, so much about Jeremiah Love, who I think certainly a guy in play here for the New Orleans Saints. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. I'll punch the time clock and get a little overtime. I'll stay over till 6:10. It'll be Steve Geller, myself, Charlie Long, in our pick six segment. Oh, Charlie wasn't too good last week, but
boom,
None of us did great. I knew it wasn't going to be an offer for me, but I'll take the 500. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this news break.